Football, the Albion and Me is sponsored by Brighton's own Bison Beer. We're sampling their latest lock-ins, the Rad Dad Beer Box, stuffed full of 12 fine brews made in Sussex, featuring 5 different styles. From traditional ales to light lager, each one has been specifically chosen for Father's Day, which is just around the corner now. There's free nationwide delivery, plus 10% on all pre-orders using the code BHAFC. So get over to bisonbeer.co.uk, that's bisonbeer.co.uk, and set the old boy up proper on Sunday the 21st of June. Hello, welcome to Football, the Albion and Me. I'm Richard Newman. In each podcast, we talk to a Brighton and Hove Albion favourite, go into detail about their all-round career, find out which teammates they pick in their ultimate five-a-side team, and just get to know them a little bit better in general. This is episode 9, and my guest this week is former Albion forward Darren Freeman, infamous for that first game at Widdean. Darren's now working as a football agent for Sports Total, which has players like Tony Cruz and Marco Royce on their books, so no small fry. This interview, recorded in April 2020, was great fun. Some amazing stories. I hope you enjoy it. Darren, welcome to Football, the Albion and Me.
Thanks, appreciate the invite and looking forward to the chat.
Now, I don't think anyone will ever forget that first game at Widdean, and we will get to that. You had an interesting route to Albion, but like every podcast we do, and we'll go right to the start. So you grew up in Brighton. What was life like in your household growing up?
It was good. I had a good relationship with my parents. I had two sisters and a brother. All I cared about really since I was very, very young was football. It's all I knew. I even got through school in football ways. I had to do my maths in there, so I counted in footballs to get through it. So it was something that I'd always wanted to do as a kid. And I had fond memories of. I remember now going back that for me, my mum and dad, they used to give me a packed lunch, and I'd go out for the whole day and they wouldn't see me. I'd be up the field, or up, we used to call it the grit, playing football with my mates. You know, you'd go and call for a friend, and if he weren't in, you'd go and call for another one, and until you got a 5 or 6 of you, and you'd go and play football for the whole day. The family was more of a boxing family, but I didn't like boxing too much. I had a go at it. I didn't like getting it, so I turned to football. And I just loved it, and obviously having a brother as well, and used to put him in goal and take shots at him. So it was just growing up and just being my whole dream, and you know, from the start was to be a footballer.
Yeah. So when did you realise that you had some talent, that you could be, that you could become a footballer? You had a journey to Brighton, which was, you were there very early in terms of their centre of excellence, weren't you?
I was. I remember Ted Street. I played for Brighton a few times, and Colin Wiffenden. I think it was I started obviously playing for local sides. Played for Oldenbury Hawks. For me, that, you know, they were great days. Obviously, my dad taking me around and doing all the travelling, and growing up playing for Oldenbury Hawks under like Roger Marshall and John Elphick and Terry Bennett, and had some great times there, and then moved on to like Barcelona and Coombe Rovers. So, you know, grassroots football, and they were great and they put me into good stead. Then Brighton come along, the School of Excellence, like when you was, you know, 14, 15, you always wanted to, you know, play for your hometown. And I remember getting an invite to go and play for Brighton Hove Albion, I got sent off actually in the game, so it didn't go too great. So
what did you do?
I think it was a tackle, and I remember Ted Street, I remember his words, he proper let me have it on the coach, and he said that I'd never put a Brighton Hove Albion shirt on again. And and they were his exact words. And I think that really installed in me. And I like to prove people wrong, and I proved him wrong, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so if we go back a bit further then, so you said, you know, playing for a hometown club is a big thing for you. Did you support Brighton or did you support another team growing up?
Well, I used to go and watch Brighton when I was a kid, and when I was obviously at the School of Excellence, we used to get free tickets. But I suppose I was like a Tottenham fan. My sort of hero was Glenn Hoddle. But I think that obviously Brighton was something, you know, you always had the old... the kit, the British Caledonia kit, and you know, the Steve Foster days, etc. So I think Brighton and Tottenham were my teams.
Is that what you remember first then from Brighton, the Steve Foster days?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you know, the cup final and you know, we as kids, we instead of everyone seeing Man United shirts or whoever was top of the league, I think a lot of majority you grew up and you did support your own team. So yeah, I remember like every Christmas getting a pair of goalie gloves, a Brighton football kit, and a football and some dubbing for the football, so and a pair of football boots. So I think that it was installed in me to sort of, you know, support Brighton. I remember the I think they had the Adidas tracksuit in you know, the ones they walked out in Wembley as well. Yeah. I think I have one of them. So yeah, you know, they were good old days as well, and I still remember them days.
When you were let go from the Centre of Excellence, how much of a blow was that at the time?
Yeah, it was. I mean, obviously, it's rejection. And I think that I remember getting I think they sent a letter out, and I was obviously gutted, devastated. And I remember my dad was as well. And I remember my dad having a chat with, I think it was Colin Woofenden at the time. And, you know, Colin was brilliant. I think he sort of agreed with my dad, and you know, they just said that I was just an average player in that league. I had to go away. I could have gone two ways, and I used it for myself. You know, I had a lot of knockbacks in my career. When you're right off to go and play for, you know, to go and trial for other clubs, but for me, I used the Brighton knockback as a positive, and I wanted to prove them wrong.
Mm-hmm. And was it your dad then that sort of had the biggest influence on you, on your career, and giving you that drive to keep going?
Oh, definitely. My dad was, you know, he was someone who believed in me massive, and, you know, told me to always keep my dream alive. And, you know, there was times when I was really down, but he was there to pick me up, and, you know, he always pushed me. And, you know, there was times when I thought that I couldn't do it, but he definitely made me think that I could do it. And you know, I owe him massive amounts for where I got to in my career, and he was a part of my career massively.
So you made it into professional football through playing non-league actually in the local area. So how did playing at that level sort of develop your game?
I think it made me raw. I think I thought that, you know, I was I remember playing over at White Oak, and I was still very young. I was 15, 16, and I was playing in the first team with the likes of Glenn Beard and Crooksley under Sammy Donnelly, who again, you know, he gave me a good start in my football career, and got a lot to thank for him, and Les Berry as well. And they sort of toughened me up. They made me a man, you know, overnight, getting an elbow and just going out there. And I had pace and power, and it just, I was just allowed to play games. And I think that the more games that you play, the better that you become. So for me, I suppose it was getting a lot of games under my belt. And, you know, I was playing county league football when I was 15, 16 for first team. You know, for first team at White Oak, and White Oak were really good in them days, and they had a great team. And I think that really put me in good stead. And my dad, that was my dad really, he said, you know, you need to man up a bit, you need to get out there, get a few kicks. And I did. And he said, if you don't want to be kicked, then you need to get faster. So I worked on that, and you know, I just progressed and scored goals and played out wide and played through the middle, and you know. And then I just went from different non-league teams. I went from, you know, White Oak and Worthing with Jerry Armstrong, the ex-Brighton player, and he was a massive part of my mentor as well. He, you know, used to take me extra training, and which was really good. And then, funny enough, I played for Horsham, had a really good couple of seasons there, and Mark Dunk was the manager, obviously the dad of Dunkey at Brighton at the moment. So and then I remember he got a call off Gillingham, and he phoned me and said that Gillingham want you to go in on trial, and he called me up to his house, and I think he gave me a bottle of beer the day before I was going for a trial. I sat there and had a bottle of Beck's with him.
Really?
So yeah, went round his house, and I remember Dunkey then, they were brothers, and they were running around right in the front room. So it's a weird world. He ended up playing, you know, being a massive player for Brighton. So, and they were only little then. And I remember him just saying to me, just go out and play tomorrow. I think was playing a game against Colchester, and just go and enjoy it. And sitting there in his front room with a bottle of Beck's, and he was giving me the old pet talk. So it was quite funny.
That's a great story. So, I mean, just going, if you go back again, like obviously when you dropped into non-league then, and you're being managed though by Gerry Armstrong, who's a bit of a Northern Ireland legend. So for all his experience, that must have given you a fairly good grounding too, mustn't it?
Yeah. Went to Worthing and with Gerry, and, you know, I remember my dad turning up. We actually went to watch a game at Woodside Road. And we was just watching it, and my dad was in front of me, and my dad sort of shouted to me and said to me, go and get your boots. I'd only gone to go and watch a game because they were playing a friendly. It was like a pre-season friendly. And my dad had like gone up to Gerry and said, like, my son's a player, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember Gerry saying, well, has he got his boots with him? And my dad saying, yeah. So I ended up going on the second half, and I think within 10, 15 minutes, my dad and Gerry were sorting out a deal that I was going to go and sign for them. So yeah, it's crazy, really. I was just going to watch a game of football, and my dad's sort of like, you know, they used to call me the son of Reg. So I ended up playing the whole of the second half and doing really well and signing for Worthing Football Club, which was I've never looked back, which was great.
Yeah, if you don't ask, you don't get, I guess. Let's tackle this elephant in the room. You were obviously instantly recognisable with your hair. Got to ask you, what was the reason for it? Where did that style come from?
What with all my hair?
With all your hair.
I don't know, really. I think I suppose that I just grew my hair and and liked it long and... you know, I had curlyish hair, and I think I probably grew my hair so that people wouldn't look at the football side of me. But no, I just think that it was just my look. And they used to say about Samson, when I cut it all off, I lost all my strength. So it all went downhill after all my hair went. So, but I suppose that was my look. And yeah, everyone used to sort of know me because I had long hair, and they've got a bit of a surprise when I turned up and I'd know it a few years later.
Had to ask the question, Darren. So for a footballer, you joined Gillingham pretty late, actually, for a professional footballer, really. Did you feel, when you got to that point, obviously you're sitting there having your bottle of Beck's, did you feel like your chance was gone before this call from Gillingham came in?
No, I've always believed that I would become a professional footballer. You know, as a kid, I know it sounds mad, but it's the only thing I knew. You know, I definitely weren't the brightest and the cleverest at school, and it's you have to be honest with yourself. And I was working, I was working on the roads, etc., and in building. Labouring, so okay. That's something that I definitely didn't want to do. But you know, Saturday morning, sometimes I'd be out at 5 a.m. and doing a day's graft, and then turning up at a ground at 2:00, getting me, you know, my kit ready. So I'd really done it the hard way. And when I got that opportunity, I think that, you know, you have to take opportunities. I think it's important, you know, because they don't come around often. And I did. I believed in myself, and you know, Gillingham at the time. I signed for them. They were, I remember it, they were bottom of the league, or near the bottom of the league, and they were in financial administration. So I remember that Neil Smiley and Flanagan were managers. And I remember the time as well that they had to get, when they did sign me, they had to get special clearance from the FA because they were, they had no money basically. So I was really, really lucky. And something else, another story, which, you know, I'm full of stories. I actually played before Gillingham signed me. So I've got me, obviously, my trial. And when they did sign me, I played for my mate's pub team on a Saturday. On a Sunday, just before I was going to play for Gillingham, just before they agreed to sign me. And a fight broke out, as sometimes, you know, when pub teams play each other. And I actually got sent off. And it was literally this time I had nothing to do with it. And I begged the referee. I was telling him that I was signing for Gillingham Football Club on the Monday. And this was on a Sunday. And he was looking at me as if I was an absolute lunatic because I was playing for a pub team. So I was begging him. And my friends were, I was having to get like the manager to go in and speak to him and say, like, this is really, this is true. Like, he is going to sign for Gillingham. And he didn't put it through. So that referee, I don't know who he is. If he has played a major, major part in my football career, because if he would have banned me, how would I have gone to Gillingham and said I got sent off in a pub football game on a Sunday?
if that ref's listening, what was the match? Who were you playing for?
I was playing for Holland. They were called Hollandine Albion at the time. And I can't remember who he was playing against, but it's just crazy. It's madness. And I was sub and I only come on about 5 minutes. So,
okay, so you're at Gillingham for a bit. And then after a little loan away, you joined Fulham. And that's where you met Mickey Adams. How were your memories of being in South London?
Yeah, they were great, to be fair. I got on well with the fans, etc. And I loved Fulham. The football team and the togetherness was incredible. We had some good players in there, just real honest players that worked very hard for one another. And the crowd were unbelievable. And again, you know, I think Fulham were the season before, because when I was at, like I say, when I was at Gillingham, we won the league. Obviously, then I went to Gillingham to Fulham, and I've got very fond memories at Fulham. I had some great times. Mm.
Then you went to Brentford, and obviously Mickey was there. Mickey took you to Brighton as well. What do you think it was about you that he really liked?
I'm not sure, really.
He obviously relied on you, though.
Yeah, I think that I suppose my honesty as a player. I think that, you know, whoever signed me, they knew what they'd get from me. I wore my heart on my sleeve. I was never the greatest footballer, but I'd always give 100%, and I was honest. And I think that as a player, that's all you can do. You know, you have bad games, etc., but you have to go out there and give 100%. And I think that that's the most, you know, I think that then might have changed now, but like I say, you know, managers knew what they were going to get from me. And I suppose it's a question that Mickey can answer. I mean, Mickey's put things in his book, so maybe he can answer that question.
I mean, most of your professional career was spent under Mickey. What was your relationship like with him?
It was good. I had a lot of time and respect for Mickey. He gave me an opportunity. and I never forget people who do that. And he allowed me to play, he allowed me to express myself, and he was always honest with me. You know, I had my problems at times, the same as everyone else with Mickey, you know, when I got injured, etc. And, you know, you do. But as long as you was in the team and everything, then the gaffer would always be good as gold with you.
So onto the Albion then. We all know you were a key part of that return to Brighton with the start of the Widdeen years. When did you find out that Mickey was interested in bringing you to Brighton? And as a local guy, when you heard that Brighton were interested, what were your thoughts on that move?
I think that I remember getting a call from Mickey and him saying to me that he's interested in me. Because Mickey actually signed me for Brentford, but then got the sack from Brentford before he managed to play me. I don't know if you remember, he was, Ron Knowles brought the club out. So I ended up sort of getting stuck at Brentford for a season, and Mickey then went to Brighton, and then after Brentford, we won the division at Brentford, and then obviously I got a call from Mickey, he wanted me to go to Brighton, and I remember him saying to me that, you know, it's going to be very difficult. I remember meeting up with him and him saying to me that, you know, you're playing for your home team, you need to think hard about it, because, you know, you're walking down the road, and if you haven't had the greatest game, you might get a bit of abuse. He said that it was very difficult for someone to play for their hometown. He said that he'd done it when he played for Sheffield United, and it was, you know, it was difficult, and it's a lot of pressure on you. But I didn't, like, when I heard that, it was a, you know, another tick. I mean, wow, you know, a lad dreaming of playing professional footballer, and Ted Streeter turning around and saying, you'll never put an Albion shirt on again, and then me having an opportunity to play for my hometown, it was an absolute no-brainer, and I was absolutely buzzing. I just couldn't wait. So, you know, I was proud as punch, and my dad was really proud, and all my mates giving me, you know, grief and stick, which was good. You know, he used to watch me when I played against Brighton and shouting things out, giving me stick and that, and I said it had changed when I played for Brighton. They used to laugh, so it was nice to sort of come home and play for your home team. So for me, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah. I mean, there's a really great article with you, with Andy Naylor in The Athletic. And I was rereading that again this morning. And obviously, even for you, returning to Widdeen was familiar for you, wasn't it? You returning to Widdeen was actually home.
Yeah, I'll run Phoenix, etc. So me coming back there, and I remember all my sports days there and sprinting around, and I think I was in the NTC, I think, as a real kid, and used to have our sports day there as well. So it was just like coming home. But, you know, I got sold the dream that Brighton were going to have this massive stadium while I was there, etc., and they got the plans out. I ended up, you know, playing at Widdeen. And a lot of people sort of said to me, oh, nice, like Widdeen. But it was brilliant for me. I loved it. It was, you know, the atmosphere was great, and the supporters were fantastic, and again, we were winning games, so it was all good.
Yeah. So you came down, and we all remember that summer was a pretty high turnover of players that Mickey was putting together his squad, and you obviously joined with quite a number from Brentford. So Charlie Oakway, Paul Watson, Danny Cullip. How odd a situation is that to sort of bring a contingent from one club together suddenly in different surroundings?
Well, I think that we knew a lot of us. I mean, I was up with Watto, at Chippy. I was there with them at Fulham. I was with them at Gillingham. You know, I think Mickey took a group of players that he could trust, and you know, you've got Warren Aspinall who's at Brentford as well, and he just knew what he'd get from them players, and you know, he was clever in a way, and and shrewd, and he got in players who wanted to play for him, and then brought in a mixture of other players, and obviously had players who were already there. So I think that we, you know, as a collective team, you know, he had a bit of everything all over the place in the squad, which was good. He had a lot of good characters in the squad as well, and he brought Simon Morgan in from Fulham. It was unbelievable. So I think that, you know, we knew each other, and he tried to get that togetherness again that we had at Fulham. And you can't beat that when you're playing for each other, and you get, you know, a squad of players who get on very well and they've got each other's back. You just can't beat that. And it, you know, we had that belief when we were 1-0 down, 2-0 down, that it doesn't matter, we'll come back and we'll win. And we did at times.
We're going to take a tiny break there before we speak about the Mansfield match, and we'll be back after this quick message. While we can't be at the Amex right now, we're all missing that match day experience. But you can bring part of that home for the rest of the season with the award-winning Piglet's Pantry, official pie supplier to Brighton and Hove Albion. You can order online for delivery across the UK, and listeners to this podcast receive a 10% discount by placing your order quoting Football, the Albion and Me by sending a message on their social media channels or emailing info@pigletspantry.co.uk. Get the best home match experience possible with Piglet's Pantry. So going back to that whole feeling of playing for your hometown club, I've still got the programme from that game, from that first match at Wigan. I think you're on the front of it, and you were sort of being presented as this face of the return to Brighton, actually, like a local player spearheading a club which was finally returning to where they belong. Did you feel any of that kind of pressure?
I liked pressure, and I suppose that, yeah, I did. But if I didn't think I could handle it, I probably wouldn't have signed. But I loved it. I just loved the thought of playing for my hometown. It meant so much to me. Like I say, it's difficult to describe, but as soon as I got the opportunity, it was like, I feel that I'm so lucky to have played, you know, for my hometown. I think, you know, it's an honour to have done that. It, you know, there was better players out there than me, and I got given an opportunity, and I will always be ever thankful for that. And you know, my boys might have got a bit of stick at school if I didn't have a good game. So I had to make sure that I tried to do the business. But possibly scoring an hat trick on my debut and the first game didn't help, because I think the fans expected that every week. So, yeah, I probably set the bar too high. So, it's crazy. Like, I don't think you appreciate it as much as until, like, you're older and you don't play for them anymore, and you know it's crazy. And I feel so thankful that I've been given the opportunity to play for my hometown. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So that game then, Mansfield 6-0. We wouldn't normally analyse matches in this podcast, but this is pretty special. So this is when it started to feel the start of a new era for Albion. Can you remember what the sort of build-up felt like atmosphere-wise around the stadium, around the city, just leading up to kick-off?
Well, I remember it. I think it was a real scorching hot day. And I remember getting loads of good luck messages in the morning and friends giving me a bit of stick. And I just, you know, and come 1:30 when you're in the dressing room and you're getting ready and you've been running up them hills and you've been sick where you've been running to the ground and you've done all your pre-season. This is what it's all about, and this is, you know, it's time for business. So for me, you get that, you know, that butterfly nervous feel, and you go out and warm up, you can hear the crowd, you can see the crowd coming in, and it's just unbelievable. You can't explain it. And then when, I know it sounds crazy, but when the kickoff, when kickoff goes, you forget, I think you forget, like, you you forget your surroundings a little bit and you just get on with the game. And it went so quick, I think, because I was enjoying myself so much. And to score three goals is just,
yeah,
well, I bet still can't. I still can't remember it.
How many hat tricks did you score in your professional career? Was that?
That's the only one. I don't even think I scored a hat trick in a training session or shooting practice. I might have when I was a kid, but
yeah,
no, that's my only. Because I'm mainly played out wide, etc. As well. Yeah. I wasn't predominantly known as a goal scorer, I wouldn't say, but, you know, I chipped in with a few goals. And for me to get an hat trick on my debut, I mean, it's, for me, it's Roy of the Rovers. It's just,
yeah,
it's unreal. So,
yeah,
it was just a
really special day for fans. After, I mean, again, being a local guy, you would have known about the pain that the club had to go through to get to this point. You know, these were new times at Widdean, and I remember people in the trees peering over fences. I'll confess, I was on the shoulders of someone watching over a fence. Just bizarre times. Everyone wanted a piece.
I think that they were put there to get my balls off shot. I think Brighton put you there to get the balls.
Yeah, now you think of it, yeah. I remember that briefing. Yeah.
So, I remember, you know, people in the trees, etc. And it's brilliant, isn't it? It's just like, that's proper football. To me, it's just, especially like when you look at Brighton now, they've come a million miles from there. And but, you know, I suppose we played a part in laying the foundations for the club now. But the fans were unbelievable, like proper fans. And it was brilliant. And I'm glad that Brighton are where they are now, because they deserve that. And like you say, they, you know, when I was growing up, and they had some great times and went through some hard times as well. And you know, the good times are back, and hopefully they stay.
Yeah. How did you celebrate that evening?
Funny enough, I went out with my wife, my girlfriend at the time, and I went to Leonardo's. I was sitting there having a meal, a quiet meal, and I remember a waiter coming up to me and with a bottle of champagne, he said, I've got a bottle of champagne here. And I was like, I was a bit embarrassed, and said, oh, like, thanks. And he said, that gentleman over there sent it over, and it was Chrissy Wilder. So Chrissy Wilder, what a legend, sent me over a bottle of champagne and put his thumb up. I mean, what an unbelievable gesture. And I've got the empty bottle of champagne now in a box. Yeah. So thanks. You know, I never forget that, that he sent me over a bottle of champagne. So if he wins the Premier League, I'll buy him a bottle of champagne.
Sounds good. Or maybe, what about if he just makes the Champions League? Maybe that will work.
He only gets a beer then.
You ended up having, I mean, you say you raised expectations for the season. You actually had a pretty good season, really. You know, a pretty high goal scoring return.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, you know, not a lot of people knew that in my younger, like when I was at Fulham, you know, I had a great season, etc. But unfortunately, I had a major knee problem, and I ended up having, oh my God, like so many operations on my right knee. And when I was at Fulham, they took my whole of my cartilage out of my knee. I had no cartilage in my knee, and they, you know, the surgeon said that I wouldn't play football again. And again, I wanted to prove them wrong. And I was having injections and tablets just to get through games. And so to have a I know that I didn't have the longest career, but to have the amount of time that I had from the injury that I had, I mean, I think the surgeon said he's seen better knees in a donkey than mine. So it was, I think that, looking back at it, I suppose that I done okay. I mean, I know I could have done better, but I was definitely sort of, my knee played a major part in me not fulfilling my potential.
Right. But obviously the next season is after when you had to retire from professional football. So what was the sort of build up to that?
Well, I think it was some, you know, I've been playing with my knees and, you know, having, like I say, injections and taking tablets, etc. And I think that then, you know, you compensate and start to put a lot of pressure on other parts of the body. And I ended up having three double hernias, and I had a tautotomy, I think they called it. And I pulled all the ligaments and tendons off my pubic bone. And it basically, you know, it got to a stage where they turned around and said that if I didn't sort of give up football, I could end up, like, you know, half in a wheelchair. So I'd whole complete reconstruction of my groin twice. So I was in a pretty bad way at the time, it was a bad time for me then.
So how difficult was that then? I mean, at such a, you know, a young age for a professional footballer.
Yeah, it was. I was in a bad place. The only way I can describe it is I didn't know who I was. I really just did not know who Darren Freeman was. I lost my whole identity, I felt. And, you know, I'm thankful for my dad, my mum, my wife and my two kids. They got me through. And obviously, you know, I'm not ashamed to say it. You know, I was having to be counselled like two or three times a week. And, you know, the PFA were brilliant. And, you know, they saved me. And they did. Because without them around, I don't know what would have happened. But you learn to cope and deal with things, and I had to, you know, recreate myself and go down a different avenue.
And how did you do that then? You say you had a lot of support and therapy to help you through. What was the sort of moment where you sort of found something different, that you could sort of find a bit more hope in something else?
My family, I think. And I've realised that I was lucky to have had the career and lucky that I had the opportunity to play football. That's the first part. And I think the second part was to find myself, to recreate myself and maybe put something back into the sport that I loved. So had a bit of time off. I got into a bit, you know, property. And I spent some quality time with my family, because when you're a footballer, you know, your family does suffer. You know, you don't have Christmases and you're away New Year's and Christmas days, etc. And you're training a lot of the time, and you know, it's difficult. And so I spent a lot of time with my family and begin to, I suppose, love myself again and find myself. But it was people don't realise that you know how difficult it was. And I look back now and I'm so thankful that I got through them times, because, you know, I wouldn't want anyone to go through them sort of times, because it was very, very difficult.
Do you think a lot of footballers get who, when they do retire, do get enough support in general?
I think, you know, nowadays the game's changed so much. I mean, nowadays, you know, you have 30 coaches. We had two coaches. You've got like the training facilities and the strength and conditioning coaches. You've got, you know, you've got mental well-being, you've got people that you can go and speak to. So, yeah, 100%. I think that, you know, they get the support. But then that still doesn't, that's not a magic pill for, or doesn't give people the right to say, well, you've got him, you can talk to him, you know, you shouldn't suffer from anything. It's, I can't explain it. It's just something that, it's like a button, switches off and on. And you really, you know, you have to really dig in deep and find yourself to get through it. But, you know, there is the help out there now. I'm glad there is, because, you know, like I say, it was a tough time. And if any player goes through that, you know, it's not a very nice thing.
Let's move on to some slightly happier times, I guess. How special does it feel to you that you're the answer to many a pub quiz? I mean, for those that may be listening to this that don't know, the first scorer in English league football of the millennium. Pretty nice honour.
Yeah, and I think that's the only question I ever get right in a quiz. So I get a lot of stick from some of the lads and that. But it's War of the Rovers stuff. So it's... I think Corky said, you know, used to call me Golden Balls or something, because, like, you know, every sort of thing comes, you bat, you score an hat trick, and you go and score the first goal of the millennium, and it's just, again, I'm just fortunate enough again to be able to go out there and do that, and it's weird, really. Like, that was Christmas Day, we got to spend a bit of time with our family, and Mickey turned round, he put us in a hotel, and I think we had to be there, and he said, right, I'm going to give you the day off, no one, and I mean it, no one be late for New Year's to go in the hotel, because we had a game, obviously, New Year. Mm. So me and Kerry Mayo were driving, and Gary Hart and my wife was in the car behind, and we got stopped by the police for speeding. And I remember the police, like, they pulled us over, and then, like, as he got out of the car, he recognised that we was we was Brighton footballers. I said, oh, I'm so sorry, we need to get, like, and he, like, started having a go at us. But then when he realised that we're Brighton Hove Albion players, he said, right, okay, well, look, I'm going to let you off this time, but get there safely, because you've got a game tomorrow. So we got in our cars and drove off and got in the hotel, and I remember saying to Kerry, he was my roomie that night, and I remember I'm saying to him, I brought a white T-shirt because I'm going to score tonight. So I sat there and put on my T-shirt, Happy New Year to everyone. So I don't know why, I just had this sense that I was going to score. I think it was against Exeter. So I think Kerry had to tell me how to spell happy. So I wrote it on the T-shirt and scored the goal, and it's unbelievable. So again, like, just how lucky to spook.
You obviously recently involved in management at Lewis. I mean, those are quite good times to be involved with the club, weren't they? I mean, you were part of the time when, you know, where Lewis in recent years obviously announced the equal pay for men's and women's teams. How proud were you to be part of that project?
You know, I didn't get too involved with the equality side of things. I've got to say that Lewis, they were brilliant, fantastic. You know, the club was unbelievable, unbelievably run, very professional, and again gave me the needs for myself to win a, you know, to go up and get promoted. But I had great staff around me with Ross and. You know, Ross Standen, who was a good friend of mine, and Tony Cody, and I had a great bunch of players, and a great chairman in Stuart Fuller. So for me, I think they're a great club. They're a big club. I hope that they do well. And, you know, I managed Whitehawk before there, and we won, I think I took them from County League up to Conference South Football. So we won four leagues, I think. So, I had a pretty good, good time managing. But I took the leap in the end.
Yeah. So tell us briefly what it is you're doing now.
So obviously when I was at Brentford, there was a German lad who come to the club called Dirk Hebel, and Dirk now owns a football agency called Sports Total, and I've known Dirk for 20 years, and I got an opportunity to work for Dirk, which is unbelievable. I'm working, you know, with fourth biggest agency in the world, and we represent players like Tony Cruz and Marco Reus and Upper Meccano. So we've got some unbelievable players, and we look after Max Sanders and Ryan Longman, who's at play for Brighton over Albion. So for me, it's something that I love, going to watch games, and you know, and talking to players and trying to help players in to further their career and give them advice, etc. So I've got an unbelievable opportunity, and I'm very grateful for, you know, for Dirk and Sasha to give me this opportunity.
And best of luck with that. Now, with each guest, we have a quick game called Jumpers for Goalpost. In this situation, you're a captain of a five-a-side team. You could be on a park, on a beach. So of all the players that you played with throughout your career, and they don't necessarily have to be Albion players, but who would be your first pick?
It'd have to be a goalkeeper then, wouldn't it? So
you can play rush goalie. It's up to you.
I'm going to go with Big Jim Stannard in goal.
And why is that?
Because he's a great character, and I think he holds a record for keeping clean sheets in a big goal. So in a little goal, it'd be even better. and he's really big, so we can make the goal smaller and no one argue with him.
Okay, so it's yourself, Jim Stannard, and then you've got three other players. Who are they going to be?
I will go with Chrissy Coleman,
mm-hmm.
Cookie. Another great lad, good laugh. So after the five-a-side, we can have a few beers because he's a good crack, and he's an unbelievable footballer and a leader. So I'll go with Chrissy Coleman, Cookie.
Yeah. So Coleman, next one.
I will go with Chippy,
mm-hmm.
Richard Carpenter,
because
he's no nonsense. Great lad, one of my good buddies, and can chip in with a good goal.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's quite a balanced side so far. So who's your, are you going to go for a striker, an out-and-out striker up front, or are you going to be the one banging in the goals?
No, I'm obviously the workhorse out of that lot. So I'll let Bobby Zamora stand in the middle and score all the goals, and I'll set him up again. So I'll go with Bobby Zamora up top.
Not bad. Okay, so Jim Stannard, Chris Coleman, Richard Carpenter, Darren Freeman, and Bobby Zamora. I think that would do all right. That would do good. Okay, next one. This is the most obvious question, but we ask it on every podcast, so we're going to have to do it again. But in this situation, you're taking over Match of the Day, and they've told you can keep one Albion match from your time, and they're going to play extended highlights of it. So what's that going to be, and why, Darren?
I think it would have to be the Mansfield game.
No way.
Obviously, because I scored an hat trick and that, but for me, it was because it was my debut for coming back home, putting an Albion shirt on, putting the number 7 shirt on, and obviously, you know, scoring the goals and in front of the home, in front of my mum and dad and my kids as well, means a lot to me. So it will be that one.
Yeah. Okay, if you could influence one thing about the game today, something that niggles you, and I don't know, then it might be something different now that you're working as a football agent, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good question. I think get rid of VAR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely, or just use it differently?
Yeah. No, just get rid of it. I just, you know, 1 minute it's a goal, next minute it ain't, 1 minute it's offside, next minute it's stopping the game, like, it all weighs itself up in the end. Get on with it. Get rid of that. Drives me mad.
Okay. Okay, now a bit of fun. This is a 1 minute shootout. Quick fire questions. Not all about football, but you just give me the first response. Okay. So here we go. Goldstone, with Dean or Amex?
Goldstone.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee all day long.
Are you a board game cheat, or do you play by the rules?
I just want to win, so I'll cheat.
In the same season, win the FA Cup or avoid top flight relegation?
Avoid top flight relegation.
Okay. Book or film?
Film.
Seaside or the South Downs?
Seaside.
VAR or no VAR?
No VAR.
Old Wembley or new Wembley?
Old Wembley.
And travel the world or lays on the world's most idyllic beach?
Travel the world.
Cool. Okay. Tell us something about you which a lot of people don't know.
Oh God. That I'm kind and gentle.
Good, nice one. Okay. leaving aside sport, what do you do to relax?
Spend time with my family.
Okay. And then finally, a couple on the Albion now. What do you think is the realistic long-term potential of the Albion now that they're at the Amex and have a fantastic training ground? How far can they go?
I think that they've got good people in and around them now. And I think that we have to be realistic as fans. And I think that if they can establish themselves over the next 3 years as a middle team, then I think that they're doing very well. I think that, you know, slowly but surely, I think would be better than, and I think they're doing it well. That, you know, they're not smashing records in paying loads of money, and I think that they're growing and they're a club in good stead, and they've got a good businessman behind them.
And lastly, do you have a message for the Albion fans?
Oh, boy, a dream, boy, the Rovers. Just thank you, and thank you to all the fans who used to cheer us on, etc. And I've been so lucky enough and humble to play for my hometown. So big thank you.
Look, Darren, it's been fantastic having you on, you know, hearing the stories about the referee who saved your career, a little Lewis Dunk running around whilst you're having a beer, and some very honest looking back at your career as well. Thank you so much for coming on.
No, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I really appreciate it.
Really enjoyed speaking to Darren. I hope you find that entertaining too. Thanks very much to him for his time. Now, if you enjoyed this podcast and you're new to it, there's loads to catch up on. Interviews with the likes of Ashley Barnes, Peter Ward, Tommy Elphick, and Gary Nelson. So please do continue to spread the word. Your support so far has been fantastic. Thank you. Subscribe, review, retweet. We're Footy Albion Me on Twitter. All one word, that's Footy Albion Me. Do follow us on there. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.